Let's have the discussion. You're listening to Canter with Scott and Adam.
Hello and welcome to Canter. I'm Scott Hillier.
And I'm Adam Breeze.
And in this episode, we sit down with CEO of Streamo, Helken Berg. Helken explains exactly what seed sales software is, the importance of extensive data gathering, and the role software companies play in the day-to-day operation of a cannabis company.
Enjoy the listen. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at Canter Podcast. Let's get into it.
Hello and welcome to Canter. Adam, how are you doing tonight, mate?
Oh, good. Thanks. Yourself?
Very well, thank you. Pretty excited to have a special guest from the United States on board and discussing a topic that we haven't hit yet. We've got Helken Berg from Streamo. How are you doing, Helken?
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming on and welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on board. So Helken, tell us a bit about your background and how you ended up at Streamo and in the cannabis space.
Sure. I happily tell you about that. It's been possibly the most exciting part of my career. I've been in technology, specifically in software, for the majority of my career. So it's about the last 20 years. I've been eyeing cannabis for five of those, waiting for the right moment to bring my skill set over. I had been primarily building software for Fortune 500 and Fortune 100 companies. And I learned a lot. It was an amazing experience. I got to do some very big projects, highly complex and in compliance fields and with, you know, thousands of clients. And it was very rewarding. But at the end of the day, the corporate world can move very slowly when it comes to innovation. And I felt, you know, as an entrepreneur, I wanted to be able to bring software solutions to a sector that was really open to innovation, was moving rapidly. So cannabis definitely fits the bill. I think it's been underserved by technology and definitely moves at a very quick pace. And there's lots of factors and stressors on operators in cannabis. And as a software nerd, when I hear that, I hear opportunity and I hear the ability to come in and make people's lives better with software. So I actually started talking to some friends who've been in cannabis for years. And I think one of the things that struck me early on was just how open everyone was. I did feel like there was a true willingness to find solutions that work, right? Corporate culture can often be steeped in resistance to change. There's a lot of sometimes just red tape that has to be gone through. And cannabis doesn't suffer from that, at least not yet. Will it in, you know, 5 years? Probably. But right now, that's not the case. And so I would sit down with operators and, you know, we'd brainstorm ideas and they were just incredibly open and said, yes, like if you could deliver this software, yes, I would use it. It'd be amazing. Like, how do I help you? And for me, as a software geek, that's the dream, right? Having people who can help me, like I can, you know, orchestrate teams and put them together and build software. But if I don't have the collaboration with clients, I'm not delivering what I want to be delivering. So long story short, I met someone who had actually already developed a beta software in cannabis, a guy named Jacques Santucci. He was an operator himself in cannabis. He'd been for several years. He's a CFO. And he'd been struggling to be able to calculate the things he needed to make critical operational decisions, as well as empower his team with software. So the investors brought me in to help transform the offering he had. And that was his company, Streamo, and turn it into a global software company, which is what we've done.
That's really cool. And you mentioned the, I guess, the community feel of the cannabis industry, which is something that we keep hearing about, particularly from people that have come from business backgrounds or corporate backgrounds, that they love the community feel that everybody's, whilst there's competition within the industry, everybody's out there to help each other along. There's this sort of pioneering aspect of what's going on right now. And everybody understands there's a bit of strength in numbers and a bit of strength in open sharing. So it's really cool to hear that you've experienced that as well, particularly with this software phase. Now, you talk about some of the issues with pre-existing software. I've spoken to people for the last 5 or 6 years about software within the cannabis industry, even though I know nothing about it. One common thread is people have been complaining that there hasn't been anything that's glitch-free or really up to the standards that they hope for. Are you able to run us through, firstly, what is this software? What's this ERP software, do you call it? And what is the seed-to-sale software? And when we talk about Generation 1 software and Generation 2 software, what were some of the flaws with Generation 1 software and how have you improved upon those?
That's a great question. So to start from where software has been for a bit with cannabis is to describe those first generation softwares that often are called seed to sale. Seed to sale softwares are simply softwares that were born out of necessity. The United States and Canada had regulations that demanded that operators report in on their assets, right, which is really anything cannabis related. And they had to do that on varying frequency levels. In Canada, it's much more straightforward. It's about once a month. In the United States, it is daily, if not synchronously with the U.S. states. So the software was built to meet that need. And I think I don't want to knock the early innovators who did it. They did it in pretty tough circumstances. I mean, the cannabis industry has struggled for a whole variety of reasons simply because of the legality. And I think getting software companies to come in has been one on that list of things that struggled that probably wouldn't have if we weren't dealing with legality. But those softwares really just did that. They handled the compliance and not necessarily even in the most elegant ways. Some of the solutions I'm aware of were often built on top of other softwares. So they took like an existing tobacco regulatory software and like skinned it to make it look like it was a cannabis software. And I can get into more detail of what that means, but it basically means they try to jerry-rig software to meet the needs of cannabis without building something from the ground up in some cases. In other cases, they did, but you know, when you're just trying to meet a compliance need, you're not taking into account all the business needs around that, and your focus isn't necessarily being user-friendly, right? You're just trying to meet one specific function, and that function isn't even, it's core to the business because you have to be compliant to stay in business on the legal side of cannabis, but it doesn't cascade to other critical parts of your business, which is, you know, what does daily use look like? Who's benefiting? You know, what other information can you get out of this software? So that's actually a lot of what I studied before I came over into cannabis. I spent a lot of time talking to individual operators, like what was working, what wasn't working. And I just heard a lot of pain. Like a lot of frustration, like you described, right? Like, and for me as a software developer and someone who leads software companies, I truly believe the right software can make people's lives better. You probably don't even notice that software. It's probably just in your life on your phone or on your computer, and it's just seamless. It's just there and you use it and you benefit from it. Like you've communicated effectively, or you've even just checked your bank account seamlessly, got the info you need and you move on. That's what good software does. It gets you what you need and you don't even think about it. But I wasn't hearing that. I was just hearing constant frustration and just worry, right? Like, is it even doing what it's supposed to be doing? Can I trust the data in the software? You know, how do I scale this thing? I can't train anyone on it. We've done all these workarounds to make it work. And long story short, I came out of that feeling very confident that this market was ready for a second generation software. And that's something I've done in other markets. And that basically means you take what's been done, you learn from it, and you do it better. So, right now the market has those initial softwares, but I don't want to overlook, there's also sort of on, if you were to draw a spectrum, sort of the initial offerings are on one side and way on the other side, there's massive softwares by big names like Oracle and SAP. And there's some companies out there that have created offerings around longstanding enterprise-grade softwares from those companies and added elements that can help in cannabis. When I was looking at those, however, and I'm very familiar, I've competed against softwares like that in other markets, they're very demanding. They take a lot of time to implement, easily upwards of 6 months. They can be quite costly. I think average implementations plus costs can easily be $500,000, you know, US dollars. And they're not flexible. That's not what they're built. They're built to be standard resource planning tools that function in existing industries and have been adapted to work in cannabis. And so there's a couple red flags there right away. Like, I have yet to meet a cannabis operator who had 6 months or more to wait to get a software up and running. That's just not the reality of their business, right? Like, whether they're highly evolved multinational operation or not, they're high speed businesses with lots of rapid change. They're bringing new people on constantly, and to keep the business continuity needed to implement a software over 6 months to 12 months is resource demanding in a way that most cannabis companies don't have. And also the cost. I would argue a software should have a return on investment in the first 6 months. I would struggle to see how you get that return on multi-million dollar projects. Maybe, but if the implementation itself is taking that 6 months, you're definitely not seeing it yet. Not to say that those softwares can't have a place in cannabis, but I would just say that there was this massive gap, right? The majority of cannabis companies need something far better than those first generation. And they need something much faster and much more flexible than those, you know, Oracle and SAP softwares. And so that's where we have positioned ourselves, is we are an enterprise-grade software. We can grow and we do service, you know, multinational companies, but we can also work for a small operator. Like, they can get on us today and grow with us because we were very deliberate in how we built the software to have that flexibility and that scalability.
So do you tailor that software to each individual client? Is that how it works?
So the key word to best describe what we do is configurability. So we're huge data and software nerds, and we spent a ton of time figuring out how to build a software that would have maximum flexibility, because we knew that every country was going to be different in its requirements. And we also knew that every country, and we've seen it happen, and this in the United States would be at the state level, can quickly change what they require of operators. And that the amount of stress that causes and the amount of vulnerability that causes for cannabis operators is huge. And so what we didn't want to have was a rigid system where if, you know, the state of California or New Zealand or whatever entity says, hey, operators, starting in 30 days, you need to be able to report on this. We didn't want to have to make our clients wait. So every single data piece in our software is something that is tracked, traced, and report and can be reported on. And it's the one part the client needs to do with us is configure it, right? You know, how do you manage your clones? How do you manage your mother plants? How do you manage your packaging? How do you manage your drying, trimming? Every client does it differently. And that part is completely flexible, but it's one software. You know, everyone's always on the same latest version. It's a true SaaS software, but it gives the flexibility that meets the reality of cannabis, right? I mean, it changes so rapidly. I find that fascinating. And I know that's a huge source of stress for operators. And I feel really happy that we can make that part of their business a lot easier to manage.
I just want to talk about the major things cannabis companies should be looking for in software.
I think that's a really good place to educate, yourself if you're an operator as you go into this. I feel before I describe the software itself, I think one important thing to figure out is how you want to go about the software selection process. I've seen quite a few operators rely on consultants. I don't know if you've seen that as well, and I know we can talk about this more later, but I would just caution, it's important to figure out who has stakes in your software getting set up quickly, well, and easily, right? So I think consultants can be extremely, extremely helpful. There's some that we work with, but I have also seen in cannabis, I don't want to call it predatory because that's not fair. But I do sometimes feel it's the consultants don't have interest in minimizing the amount of hours they apply to any given project, right? So if you involve them in a software selection project, they don't necessarily share the interest that you as an operator has of getting off the ground in 30 days or less, right? That just isn't how they make their money. So I think one thing I'd say to start is when you are dealing with any software company, because, and I mention this because this actually does apply to software companies themselves, is how does that software company make their money? Are they making it off of continually consulting with you? Are they making it, you know, in our case, we make it from monthly fees. We're a typical SaaS company. You sign up, you pay monthly. If you scale up, you know, the fees sort of slide with you. It's very flexible. And it's in my interest as a software company to get in, set you up, and get out as fast as possible and just retreat to a support role because, you know, the more clients I bring on, that's how my company makes money, right? I don't make money from you struggling. I don't make money from you having any software issues. I want it to be as smooth as possible, as easy as possible. So that's one thing I would mention. And I do think that comes into play with some of these bigger softwares that we mentioned, like the SAPs and the Oracles. The consultants that work around those, because those softwares aren't flexible, anytime there's a regulatory change, anytime you evolve your business, let's say you're just in cultivation and you add manufacturing, I mean, you're looking at whole new costs each and every time you're, you know, around software. So I would do that thinking as you engage different companies in the sales process, right? My company included, we all come in, we pitch our software, we try and get to know you and figure out if it's a good fit. I would ask questions. So as far as specific software questions, I would find out how the software is built. I do think that first generation of softwares is built in a variety of ways. Some of them, quite a few of them are sort of add-ons to existing softwares. And I do feel like that's a risk. For an operator. If the software you're relying on through a vendor isn't entirely their own, they can't actually guarantee full functionality, right? If the software the vendor is providing you relies on someone else's software, that's out of their hands. So if that original software either is degraded over time, relies on a software language that is no longer supported, or libraries that, you know, go defunct, you might find yourself with a software that it kind of gets orphaned in a way. So it just is something to keep in mind. You know, who actually has built this software? I'd also look at how flexible is the software. I have yet to meet any operator in cannabis who isn't expecting substantial changes to their business in the next 6 to 12 months. I haven't, right? Everyone's operating as they are now, and they are always, always planning ahead. And it's always involving changes, whether it's new team members coming on, some new aspect of their business that they're evolving. And I feel like that's really important to know, because you're not just buying software for today, you're buying it for the next 6, 12 months, you know, 2 to 5 years. And with that, I would point out, you know, it's really easy to underestimate how painful it can be to switch softwares, right? So sometimes it's fine to say, all right, let's just get something that works. Let's get it today. You know, we needed this yesterday anyway. But if you're on a software and you've already trained your team and you have your inventory integrated and you have daily practices integrated, you know, switching that software in 2 years when you're even bigger and even busier is actually can be quite costly to an organization. And I think that brings me to possibly one of the most important things to consider with software, which is the cost to maintain. And the cost to maintain software, I would consider that cost to switch is part of that, right? How much would it take my team to switch over? Because all of those man hours put in to learning a software as well as switching to a different software, those are hours your team could be doing something else in the business. And I'd also say those are the same hours you should be considering that you could be saving with the software. So sometimes we meet operators who are, you know, rightly trying to manage costs tightly, and they're trying to figure out where to spend money. But I think what you need to think about is, if I get this software, you know, and if I'm saving 2 hours a day of my team's time, because what they were doing on a spreadsheet or they were doing in a bad software and supporting with spreadsheets on the side is now done in one software smoothly and easily, you know, that's a value. That literally has a money value to your business. So I think that cost to maintain is really important to figure out. And that's also your ROI on your own software, which is your return on investment, which should be reached in about 6 months and ideally. And then the last two, I think one's obvious and one's maybe less obvious. flexibility ties into that, you know, point about the business is constantly evolving, right? Like, what can this software not only do today, but what can it do for me 2 years from now? What does that roadmap of that company look like? You know, do they have changes planned, features planned? What can I expect from them? And the last one is just the culture fit. And I don't necessarily mean the culture of the software company, but I mean, what could this software do for the culture of your company? I think that's vastly underestimated. If you have a software in place that frustrates people, that permeates their daily life, right? People spend more hours at work than they do with their private, you know, with their families. And if they're going to work every day and they're frustrated with the software and they're, you know, every 5 minutes or every hour going, you know, grr, why does it do this? You know, that actually becomes part of your company culture. And I think it's really important to realize that there can be a lot gained by making the right software decisions that bring a seamlessness and a cohesiveness to a team, right? You're kind of all playing from the same playbook if you've got a good software backing up your team. And again, if it's doing what it should, you're not even going to really be thinking about it. So that's kind of my list. I think one other thing, hopefully all companies will be able to lay this out clearly. And it's just a final thing that I wouldn't overlook, as obvious as it seems, is also what's the support package the company offers. So yes, you have a software, but the reality of cannabis businesses is they're 365 days a year, right? You're never stopping growing. You're never stopping producing. You have needs that constantly touch your software and put pressure on your software. And let's say it's even, you know, you need to make a change or add something to the software that you didn't have before. How available are they going to be to support you on that? You know, are they booking that 6 months out, or can they help you right in the moment? You know, so I would really ask them, what does that relationship look like over time?
Yeah, I think that leads right into the actual role of the software company in the cannabis operation. What data is the software company gathering throughout the life cycle of the plant and the actual operation?
I love this question. So I think I've already confessed to you guys that I'm a massive data geek. So interrupt me if this is too much nerdiness for you. But so I would argue that a lot of the software's flaw is they actually don't gather enough data. So you can only, you know, analyze and work with data that is actually being collected. So I actually think, to your last question, that's something you should heavily look at. What data is actually being collected? Because you can't ask for it after the fact, right? Or at least it's very, very hard. So the data, I think, that is incredibly powerful in cannabis is everything related to your asset. And I'm going to talk about cannabis as an asset because it is, right? Every part of the plant has some kind of value. And I feel like in order to align the operational and the managerial and the financial aspects of your business, I think so many of those tensions and that pressure, that downward pressure on a cannabis business to find profit and to manage margins and to really tightly know costs can actually be aligned really easily with data, right? So you've got, I think, you know, really savvy operators know that cannabis is a commodities market. And that means there is incredible pressure on producing the very best product, whether it's a finished good or, you know, you're just growing plants or you're doing both, is to produce the very best product for the very least cost or optimize your costs around that. So you want to have data around all the costs that go into growing your plants, right? Nutrients supplied, you know, electricity is one of the biggest expenditures. Your labor costs, right? How many hours is your team putting into maintaining things? All the biological controls that you might be applying to your cultivations. From a manufacturing perspective, efficiency, right? I would argue both for cultivation and manufacturing. What are your losses? I mean, how many disease plants are you managing? For manufacturing, how much product isn't passing quality control, or how much loss is there even? Machine hours. We were working with a company just last week. They have two massive drying machines, and one routinely requires about 4 extra hours of drying, which maybe doesn't sound like a ton, But we were able to take data from that and analyze that, you know, it was costing them by the extra hours their team has to take to check in on the product, right? Because they check it every 2 hours in the final drying cycle, plus just electricity input and all this stuff. They were able to figure out that in the end of 2021, they're actually going to cycle out that machine and upgrade, which is a pretty big capital investment. But they were able to feel really good about it because they knew the data, right? That's I think, where we've seen teams totally transform their ability to operate and scale is having data. Another example is we found a lot of cultivators really know their craft, right? They've been doing this for years, like long before it was legalized anywhere, and they really know their plants and they know what they're doing. But then they get married together with sort of a more corporate-ish type team who is very interested in yield, right? Like, I want X yield on my plants and I want, you know, to have so many grow days, and it feels like two worlds colliding. But what happens is when you actually have the data at hand and you can say, okay, when I space my plants 2 feet apart and I give them this many hours of light plus sunlight, and these nutrients on these days, we got this yield. And then you can do an A/B test and you can say, all right, we took the next 1,000 plants and we applied these small changes. The yield was this. Let's say you space them closer, right? That's a funnily common thing we hear, is that managers want plants to be pushed in closer together to maximize yield in a grow house. And growers are constantly like, that doesn't work like that. You actually change the way the plants grow. And long story short, if you have data at hand to actually prove that, you know, the cost supplied from the materials of, you know, all the nutrients, all the, you know, inputs into growing something resulted in one yield versus a different set of costs resulting in a different yield, you can actually sit down at a table together, right? Sort of cross cultures, the cultivation culture and the sort of managerial culture. And the same with processing, by the way, and manufacturing, and just sit and look at numbers and say, okay, here's what we did. Here's how effective it was. You know, do we want to perhaps, you know, tweak this and do an R&D line to see if we can optimize this more? Or do we decide that option A was just better and we'll do this? You know, and you can, you know, get down to the strain level, right? I mean, genetics matter, right? And start to really isolate what's working well in a whole variety of aspects of your business based on the data. So sort of like the last nerdy thing I'll say is, data is just the numbers. Information is actually what you make out of the data, right? So you look at the numbers, and then as a business, when you sit down and analyze them, you're creating information that you can do something with. Right? Like, okay, this yield was 10% higher, then that's information. You can actually act on that.
I like that you stress the importance of that data. And I was speaking to a friend of mine that's a head of cultivation for an emerging company in the cannabis space. And they were talking about Spanish breeders that have been shut down or breeding facilities. And breeders looking for new locations and new operators to try and reproduce those genetics. And he was just sort of stressing the lack of data available to people that may be looking into those avenues. And he said it's just really frustrating to try and integrate with people that just don't have that interest in the data, and how hard it makes the job of transitioning to a different farm. So it is quite fascinating to hear how important that data really is.
If it makes them feel bad, I mean, that's a very common frustration. And I think that's why we get excited, and why we also like to partner so much with clients, because, you know, we're software people, and our software works best if operators are constantly telling us what they want to see, right? So, you know, they'll come to us and say, you know, if I could visualize this data this way, that would be massive. Can you do that? And, you know, our answer is yes. And we put it together, and it just blows their mind, because they've been suffering along for 5 years not getting to see that, right? Or I think the other thing to mention is, it's not always that there's no data. It's also a matter of time. You know, a lot of teams we run into, they technically have gathered some data, but it's residing in formats that don't allow them to actually interpret it, right? It's in spreadsheets. So they'll have years of, you know, batch information, but, you know, maybe once a year they can sit down and retrospectively make an analysis, but that's not the speed of your business, right? You already have new plants in the ground or new production lines going. You need that in real time. So I think that's where software should be helping. And that's the expectation I'd want to set for operators, right? Like, you don't need a retrospective, you need real time inventory and managerial information.
When we talk about all these new operators that are emerging with a growing industry, you've mentioned a lot of, issues, things that can be weighed up when people are choosing their software. You mentioned the culture of the workplace. You mentioned training issues when you bring new staff on, training issues when you may change over with software. You mentioned the support that you receive from the IT company. How important is it when people are in the planning phase of their facility? How early should they be considering your software or someone else's software? What part of the decision making process should you guys be involved in?
That's a really great question. I would say before you open. I think there's sometimes the feeling that, you know, well, we haven't broken ground yet, or we did break ground, but, you know, we're still hiring, or there's all these as a entrepreneur, really, which is what so many people in cannabis are, so many things that have to happen. And software just feels like something that should be sort of down the road a bit. I would argue it can actually be a huge stress relief and a huge strategic move to have that decision already made. I mean, I'd want it in place at least 6 months before opening up, because you figure, you know, you can configure it and have it the way you want. You can have everyone trained. You might even be doing small batches to get started, right? Even if you're not fully operational yet. So I would just emphasize to do it early and to imagine not what your business is going to be in month one, but really where are you going to be in year five. And try and buy for about that. You need a software that scales with you. And I think it's very easy to either under or overbuy.
So ongoing relationships with your software vendor. So someone signs up with yourself. What sort of relationship can they expect from you once they've started that subscription service? What can they expect to get from you guys as far as ongoing support goes?
So I'd say this is actually something that's pretty cannabis specific. I think there's a lot of sort of standards out there for how software companies function, right? Like, you can talk to a chatbot, or you could, you know, send an email and get a ticket back. And you know, we have all that. But I think the reality of cannabis is you have so many companies. And again, truly, even the large multinational operators are this way on the inside. They are in startup mode, right? They're constantly hiring in new people. They're constantly, you know, acquiring companies. So, I mean, really, this is from small operators about to start all the way up. There's an intensity to the day-to-day operations that I feel you need the ability to pick up a phone and call someone. It just is the way I feel this industry needs to be met today. You know, maybe 5-10 years from now, it's going to settle down. And, you know, you'll have dedicated people who, you know, all they do is maybe answer internal questions about software. But right now, you know, people need real-time information. So that's a decision we made as a company, was to really focus and excel at support. We'd heard that was a massive pain point with other software companies, was that they weren't moving at the speed of their business, and that they were often left waiting, and that the stressors that mounted in situations because they were waiting for an answer frustrated them. And it was a kind of a business loss in a way. So for us, that's the decision we made. I'm not saying that's mirrored elsewhere in the market, but we just felt the reality of cannabis operations is there are high velocity. They're complex, right? You've got agriculture, you've got manufacturing and processing, you have huge amounts of compliance. You've got people navigating all sorts of quirkiness because it's cannabis, right? Insurance isn't straightforward. Bank accounts aren't straightforward. There's so many extra things that are stressing teams out that just doesn't exist in other industries. So I would just say at this juncture, and I'd say for the next handful of years, it's really important to make sure every vendor you work with is really in the trenches with you, right? That they're really willing to be omnipresent and make your business successful, because I cannot imagine any cannabis operator needing one single extra stress. Like, you just don't need it. And I'd say that's very exceptional for this industry. Like, I've worked in startups all my life. Like, I'm quite used to it. I like it. I enjoy the creation, the growing of businesses, and hats off truly to all cannabis operators, because it's a uniquely stressful industry, in my opinion.
Yeah, that takes me to something I really want to delve into with you a little bit, Helkin. The evolving landscape, and not just domestically there in the US. I mean, you have all these issues that are coming up with new states legalizing, states changing their legislation, changing their regulations. And then you have this whole global sort of boom that's happening. It seems like every month you see somewhere else that's legalized medicinally. How do you see the industry moving, and what sorts of data are specific governments requiring from the operators?
I think the short answer of where the market's going, and in many ways it has, is that it's a commodities market. And that simply means that the cost per gram of what you're producing, whether you're just growing, or you're buying in, you know, third party, and you're manufacturing and selling, you know, you're a wholesaler, or let's say you're all the way at retail, that cost really matters. And you have to plan ahead to that. And I'd say especially to emerging markets that might be entering into a much more formal global stage, it's going to be that much harder, right? Like, especially, I think we've got legalization on the horizon here in the United States. And, you know, I can't say for sure what import-export is going to look like. But if that starts evolving, you know, we already know Canada and, you know, Uruguay, there's other countries doing really well in that. If you're entering into that atmosphere, you absolutely need to be mindful of costs from day one. And that's not a bad thing. I feel like sometimes that feels almost anathema to the spirit of cannabis, and it's really a powerful plant. But I feel like if you want that to reach people, and if you want to reach them with your product because you know your product's the best, you have to be willing to truly manage the business tightly and in a really efficient way. As far as the regulations go globally, it really varies. Definitely a lot of track and tracing around pesticides, herbicides, and anything applied to products, around safety. They have seen a fair amount of tracking also around inputs like light, things like that. I would say in the United States specifically, it's highly transactional. They basically want to know where every single gram is at all times. It's a very onerous compliance standard that's in the United States. I'd say Canada is much more reasonable and straightforward. And I've seen more countries follow their path than the United States. And that's great, because I think it's much more scalable and much easier to manage for operators. But I just think that the compliance landscape has a long way to go to settling down. So I wouldn't rule anything out. I think the one thing that gets pulled into the word compliance, so historically, I feel like when people talked about compliance, they were talking about governmental compliance. What do I need to report to my government, whether it's local or, you know, at the country level? But what really is happening, in my opinion, probably should have happened a while ago, is compliance around pharmaceutical grade product and around good manufacturing practice. So good manufacturing practice is something used in the food industry worldwide, and it's simply a way to ensure that anything that you as a human ingest is safe, right? That all the protocols have been followed, that, you know, surfaces have been cleaned, that people interacting have been trained, they know safety procedures, they know when to destroy a product versus continue it through the supply chain to you consuming it. They're well established. They do vary, like the EU and the UK, US, it's all a little bit different, but there's some general threads there. And I'm seeing that emerge, which is great. It only protects operators to have those standards, because if there ever is, you know, the threat of a recall, it protects your brand, right? If you've operated at the highest level, and you've put those processes in place, and you have the data to demonstrate that that's been done, first of all, it puts you in good graces with your governments. It most importantly makes sure that consumers know that your product is of high quality, right? That you're taking the time to do that. And then with the pharmaceutical grade, it's very similar. It's just, you know, a matter of making everything traceable, as well as, you know, quality standards around what gets put into any product, so that, you know, you, if you're a vulnerable consumer of cannabis, you know, you're a patient, you're using it medicinally, you want to know for sure that there haven't been any products put in with that cannabis that are at all dangerous to you, right? If you're, you know, in cancer recovery, you're managing pain, you're, for whatever reason, you know, let's say you're even a younger user and you're, you know, managing a medical condition, high frequency user, you need to make sure that it's really good stuff. So I'd say, knowing it's a commodities market, knowing the cost matters, truly being able to understand the cost of your products, and it's not just the final sale, you know, price, but truly the cost of everything that went into producing that, including, you know, the man hours, including your, you know, building costs, you know, your capital outlays, everything that goes into that, as well as setting yourself up to, you know, sort of the buzzy word is de-risk your business. But I truly believe it, like take risk out of your business. If you have process in place, if it's documented, if you can get people to follow it, and if you can make sure that in doing so, you've created a safer, better product, that first of all is best for your clients, your, you know, your consumers. You know, whether it's another business buying it to process it, or it's people buying it to consume it. But also, you know, the reality of cannabis is if you're a growing business, you need investment. So investors are also going to look to that. How well are you managing your business? What are the risks of your business? You know, where are you putting them at risk for the money that they may put into your business? And if you can demonstrate, we run a tight ship, right? We know all of our costs. We know, where all of our inventory is at all times. We have every process documented. We do all these safety procedures. I think that will be the way for anyone entering the market and for anyone growing in the market to position themselves to come out on top.
How can you mention earlier the, I guess, the intricacies of import and export? We didn't really get into it. You did mention if we have players establishing domestically in countries around the world, and they do plan on being a player on the global stage when import-export does really start to take off, can you maybe just elaborate a little bit on what issues these people may face? You did stress that they need to really pay attention to their costs and their overheads. Can you just elaborate on that a little?
I think there's a couple of things to think about. I can't say with certainty which direction things will go in. I think we've all globally lived through a really trying time with COVID, but it there have been some learnings for all of us. And I think one is that supply chains can be quite fragile, right? Like, I think we've all seen things like, it's a running joke now in the United States, but toilet paper crisis, right? You know, everyone was, you know, people stormed the shelves and grabbed it all. And then maybe that's a terrible example, but the idea is just that, like, supply chains are volatile. And that, I think, was a first time, I think, just sort of your average citizen saw that, right? Like, oh, wow. Like, I think we've all lived in this very, like, plentiful time in history where we've had fair amount of access to things. I'm not saying that's the global experience, but for those of us in countries producing cannabis, that's most likely been our experience. And it just exposed that these things are fragile, and they take planning. And I think when you're talking about someone coming into a global market where there is import-export already in place, I think being very strategic about where you fit in that supply chain is the smartest thing you can do. Right. There are going to be global players. There are also going to be craft producers. Right. I think there you could probably take an analogy from, you know, the beer industry. Right. You've got massive global producers, and then you've got, you know, my personal preference, the awesome local craft producers. Both have their place and both can be profitable. I think knowing where you fit into that is critical. And I think also knowing how you differentiate. I think it's pretty easy to see that the local brewery business thrives because of brand, right? You buy them because you know it's high quality. you might even have a sense of the brand's personality, like the people behind it. You might even just like it because the packaging's super cool, right? Like there's a whole variety of reasons you might choose a craft product over a mass produced. And I think cannabis will play out in a very similar way, right? I think there's going to be people that have refined some of the best strains on the planet. They'll probably have some of the best managed product on the planet, and you'll be willing to pay a premium for that. And I think there's people who will look for something more generic, or maybe they won't have the ability to choose as much because they're getting it medicinally. And, you know, depending on what governments approve as a medical product, you know, you might just get what you get. So I think that strategic thinking is critical. I would also just say generally, have plan B and plan C, right? Because, if cannabis is taught all of us, whether you're on the tech side, like I am, or you're an operator, or, you know, in your positions, I think we've all witnessed that nothing quite goes as everyone expects. Things shift by 6 months, 12 months. You know, there's an obstacle put in the way that you weren't expecting a week ago, and that's okay. You just have to be flexible. But I think that's where having a plan is critical. And I think part of that plan is the vendor discussion we had earlier, right? Like who's supporting your business becoming a reality? And that's everyone from, you know, from who you're signing your leases with for any land you're using, your facilities you're opening up, the team you're hiring on, all the way to a software vendor such as myself, right? Like are they willing to remain flexible to help you be successful?
Fascinating. Well, I was having a discussion with a gentleman in Denmark who was stressing his frustrations that as we spoke, apparently no producers in Denmark had actually sold any product, and he was getting frustrated that there was a heap of import happening, yet no domestic product was being sold. Can you just tell us where the major exporting nations are, which sort of players are out there that are I guess, committing to these exports and imports?
I think it's we talked about, I guess, not on this podcast, but a little bit before. I mean, I think I'd look to anywhere where the growing seasons are the most favorable, right? The governments have a massive advantage of just the geography of their countries. You know, I think the United States probably will see a lot of imports from South America. Within the United States, Puerto Rico is great, right? They've got way more growing hours than a lot of other parts of the United States. I think it's a little early to say exactly who's going to position themselves where, because there's all these artificial barriers in the business to date because of legality. So I think it's really where the government's eagerness aligns around supporting cannabis. And I think cannabis has so many benefits. I mean, it's job creation, it's tax revenue, right? I mean, almost every government globally right now is struggling with revenues because of COVID. I think there's a lot of obvious reasons to accelerate legality, but as we all know, there's also a huge taboo around cannabis. I think it's not based in science whatsoever, but that's just the reality of most places. And I think, I think you would, you know, if you're an operator who's dedicated to whatever country you live in, I think it's just best to keep your ear to the ground where you are. I think it's, you can spend a lot of time trying to predict other countries' maneuvers, but, you know, in the end, it's going to be something that evolves over time. And you need to understand your own market first and best. I think there's a couple people who are very vocal and very well educated on global markets who post about it, for example, on LinkedIn. I would find those people. I think they cut through a lot of the noise. Like with Mexico, there's a ton of excitement about some of the recent movement in their legislature. And I myself find it extremely exciting, but those that are sort of on the inside say it's all well and good, but the reality is it's going to take a while. Right. So that's a completely different perspective on what you might be reading in the buzzy headlines. And I think finding those few voices who can give you a very quick soundbite that lets you know the core of what to consider about the issue is important. And I think just keeping focus, I think that's actually a great startup lesson in general, is just keeping focus, knowing where to put your energy. There's a ton of excitement in cannabis at various times. And I think there's a lot of highs and lows. I feel like you two must have seen and heard a lot of that. And I think it's best just to find facts and stick with facts and keep a focus on your business with that plan B and plan C in mind. Because getting swept up in speculation and a variety of things that may or may not directly affect the first, 2 to 5 years of your business isn't a good use of your time.
So Helkin, if people are listening that are starting up or building their plans for a facility, how do they deal with you? What's the process? Do they approach you for quotes? How do they approach you? What's the process that they're going to follow from there? And how do we sort of get Streamo into some of these facilities?
Sure. So I think facilities planning stage is probably around when I would say is the right time to start looking at software. I think the really important thing to do is get the right decision makers involved in the process of looking at software. And that's before you would ever even reach out to me, figure out who internally. It's very easy to kind of delegate it out to someone like, hey, go check out these softwares, right? And then they go through 5-10 hours of demos with softwares and come back and they're like, hey, these guys are cool, or what about this? And that's fine, but I think you could quickly end up doubling up, tripling up on team time, because then the next guy's like, oh, I want to see it too. And the next guy, okay, but I need to check it out. So, and that's fine, that happens. But I do feel like, do yourself the favor of sit around the table, right? I'm sure you're extremely busy, but find that moment where you can sit at a table and be like, all right, who from the operations side needs to be involved in this decision, right? Who owns that sign off? Who on the financial side owns that sign off? Who from a managerial perspective owns that sign off? And if you're really early days, it might be one person. That's fine. But if you've hired on your initial core team, maybe it's 3 people, maybe it's 5 people. And I think having those roles in the software decision-making process is critical, because that just makes it so much smoother. Everyone kind of knows their lane to stay in, right? Like, okay, I'm going to look at this software and I'm going to assess it specifically for how well I think I can manage my plans in it, right? And then the next person goes, okay, I'm going to look at this software and I'm going to specifically look at what I can gain as an accountant from the financial data. And then, the CEO or whoever's on top can say, all right, I'm going to take all this feedback and I'm going to make a call based on where I think this business is going to be in 2 to 5 years, and move ahead. And I think doing that, right, doing that pre-work is the biggest benefit to you as an operator and making a smooth software decision. I feel like what can be quite difficult if you don't have that laid out is the transfer of information in a team, right? Because everyone's moving so quickly, and if you don't have the right people involved, you are trying to catch people up on a process, and then something that probably could have taken you, maybe 4 weeks or 2 months to decide is you're half a year down the road and you still don't have a software. Right. So, I would just say it also, in a way, it could be a really good exercise that works for a lot of other things in your business too, right? If you can set up a team around software selection and you can go smoothly through delegated roles of who's assessing what part and who's the final decision maker, you can use that model for a ton of decisions you make. So I think it's actually, really good ground to bring some team alignment. And I think people in general, they like to know what their job is, right? They want to know how to be helpful. I think people are generally helpful people. They want to feel part of a team. They want to know they're moving something forward. And I think in a great way, this software selection can be that. So what that looks like with Streamo, people reach out in a whole variety of ways. They can, reach us on LinkedIn. They can send us an email. They can reach us on a chatbot on our website. And then we engage with them. Typically what we do, and I think this is just a bit of a learning, we actually like to talk to you first and learn about your business, because that way, our software is big. It does a lot of different things. If we first learn about your business, a bit about where you are and where you plan to be, the next phone call actually is when we would demonstrate the software, because then we'll actually show you the parts of the software that are most relevant to that discussion. So So, and then we can even potentially talk about pricing that point too, because we actually know what you need out of the software, right? If you're not using all of it, it's a platform, right? There's parts of it you may not need. We can actually talk about what the right size pricing is for your operation.
That's great information. And I'm sure there's going to be a couple of listeners listening to this right now that are really considering reaching out to you guys. Helkin, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. It's been an eye-opener for both Adam and I. One field of the cannabis industry that we were very much under-educated on, and it's been a pleasure learning from you. And, thank you very much for joining us and having a chat.
Yeah, anytime. I love talking about software, if you can't tell. So reach out anytime, and I'd be happy to talk to any of the listeners who want to learn more. We can talk through any aspect of what we chatted about here, or even get, dive straight into the software if you know you're ready to pursue examining, looking at a variety of softwares. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, it's been a pleasure. And thank you again. Thank you very much. And we'll speak to you down the track. Thank you very much, Helkin.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Cantar. Any guest views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and not necessarily those of the hosts. Cantar strongly suggests listeners research local, state, and federal laws and regulations before conducting any cannabis-related activity.